Today marks 68 years since the official Japanese surrender to the U.S. and the end of World War II. The submarine USS Silversides played an important role in the epic struggle in the Pacific. From 1941 to 1945, the Silversides inflicted heavy losses on Japanese shipping. The sub sunk the third most tonnage of any submarine in the U.S. Navy. The U.S. Silversides Submarine Museum and the submarine itself is now located in Muskegon, Michigan. WKAR's Peter Worf joined Silversides docent Gary McKean for a tour of the boat and what inspired McKean's interest in this living piece of living history.
I started coming to the museum to see what I might be able to give to the community back. And prior to that, my father, I might add, was a World War II POW. And although Dad died about 20 years ago, all my life I knew that things were different in our house. And I never had heard Dad talk about World War II. It was always something he kept in his mind, in his subconscious. And it was always something that intrigued me. Coming to the Silverside Museum, I went to a U.S. history class that basically dealt with World War II this last winter. And as a result of that, I listened to a gentleman who was a tail gunner on a B-17, POW. And he was shot down, and as a result of that, he was in the same stalag my father was in. And he talked about their experience in this particular prison, which was very, very tough, say the least.
What did he say about it?
Well, he talked about how they were treated. They were treated not very well. They lived on about 300 calories a day of food, which is next to nothing. They basically were starved to death. And just a mistreatment by the German guards and so on. But that wasn't really why it brought me to the Silverside Museum. I thought about the boat having been on it as a child, the fact that it still exists. It was really pretty amazing. And I just literally signed up to see what I could do. Maybe I could cut the grass or do maintenance or something. Lo and behold, I got a call that they would like to have me as potentially a tour guide with a background in sales for quite a number of years. I'm used to talking to the public with in groups and so on. So it was very fascinating to me to be considered that way. But I do this in memory of my father. Dad, having been a World War II veteran, POW, as all of our veterans from World War II leave us slowly over the years, they need to have the voice of what they did for the United States and for what they did for the country to go forward. So I'm picking up a voice of a sailor that was on the Silverside. I don't know who that would be, but one of the sailors that sailed on the 14 patrols of the boat. I hope to let the story be told to anybody that will listen that comes on Wednesday to our program and talk about what they did and what the boat did and the history of the boat and what it meant to the United States.
I'm talking with Gary McKean. He's a docent here at the USS Silversides Museum in Muskegon, Michigan. Gary, can you talk overall a little bit about the incredibly deep history of service of the Silversides? This is a submarine that entered service, as I understand, right after Pearl Harbor and continued all throughout the war with, I think you said, 14 patrols and all the way through World War II.
Right. Well, she does have an incredible history. She was actually, the keel was laid in November of 1940, and she was first put into the water in August of 1941. Mm-hmm. And she was actually commissioned, you're totally right, commissioned 8 days after Pearl Harbor was bombed. So she spent all of her 14 patrols in her whole life, basically wartime, in the Pacific. She was built in Vallejo, California, at the Mare Island Naval Island Reserve there. And as a result of that, she had a long-term history of being a boat that was really favorably looked at. But over those 14 patrols, she's earned 4 presidential unit citations. She has earned 12 battle stars awarded by the U.S. Navy. And she's responsible for shooting, basically torpedoing, 30 enemy ships during World War II. There were only two submarines that actually torpedoed more, sunk more tonnage and more numbers, and those boats are not longer with us any longer. So as a result, the Silverside is the oldest and the most successful submarine of World War II that still exists today in Muskegon, Michigan.
It seems a remarkable thing that this was a submarine that even survived 4-plus years. This is maybe the most dangerous business out there.
Right. During the course of the war, the United States lost 52 submarines, and they lost 3,504 sailors. 22% of the men that went out in submarines, unfortunately, did not come back, and we say that they're on eternal patrol. But the submarine business was certainly a dangerous one. The Silverside was not without a casualty. Mike Harbin was a torpedoman third class, and on the first patrol, 10 days into the first patrol, Mike unfortunately was shot by a Japanese shell, and he died on the boat and was buried at sea that night. But on the 14 patrols of the World War II, there were no other sailors lost during that time, which is pretty remarkable. And many do call the Silverside the luckiest submarine in World War II.
Yeah, when you consider the fact that you had just about a 1 in 4 chance of not coming back,
right.
It is remarkable to have survived more than 4 years.
Well, that's very, very much true. And what's even probably more incredible is the story of 73 men going to war in a sphere that's basically 300 feet long and 16 feet wide. And they would leave Pearl Harbor, and they would go out for basically 55 days on a patrol in the Pacific. They largely would work off the Solomon Islands, the Philippines, or off the coast of Japan. And we have documented levels or documents of where their patrols were with basically diagrams and charts and so on, so we know exactly where they were and what they talk about.
Thanks for that history. Can we have a tour now?
That would be great.
Ship?
Wonderful. Thank you.
So here we are on the shores of Lake Michigan right now looking at the USS Gato-class Silversides here in Muskegon.
That's right. The boat physically itself, the overall length is 311 feet and 9 inches. The beam is 27 feet. When we go down into the pressure hull, what you'll see is literally the pressure hull is 300 feet by 16 feet. And there are 9 compartments that are all basically watertight compartments. The doors would be shut if general quarters were sounded or collision or dive. And basically the doors were shut and the men were then locked into each of the compartments that they were responsible for.
I'll go down first.
Okay.
We probably don't need to stop here. We'll
here
just
we go.
Go down into the forward torpedo room.
Okay, real good.
All right. Forward torpedo room.
Yep.
And there are bunks in here too.
The forward torpedo room was probably the best compartment on the boat. It is by far the largest. So what we did is we just came down the ladder. The ladder and the hole in the hull, or the hatch was cut into to make it a museum ship in the middle 1960s. So the hatch that we just came through typically was not there when she was in war service. So there's one hatch that goes into the compartment. There would typically be 14 men that would live and work in this area. They were called torpedo men. You know, the hatch would be open. The men would then hook up their pulleys and chains and ropes, and they would then lower the torpedoes down. They're 3,300 pounds, remind.
By hand, from overhead.
From overhead.
Now you get an impression of how strong these guys had to be.
That's right, you know, and trying to roll something like this around. So on either side of what we're looking at right now are two of the Mark 14 torpedoes, so you can actually see the length of them up close. And they slept right next to them. So the bunks basically were fashioned around the torpedoes. Any typical time, an eight-hour period, a third of the boat would be sleeping, a third would be potentially maybe eating, and the other third would be studying, if you will, all sorts of different things that they would be involved in. So, if I could walk this way with you. But we've now gone into the control room. This is the nerve center of the submarine. And typically 7 to 8 men would be on duty at any given time here. The chief of the deck would be here. And directly to our left and up this ladder is the conning tower. And in the conning tower, the navigator would be. He typically would be an officer. You'd also have the helmsman. So, in fact, the boat would be, if you will call it, steered. The boat would be steered from the conning tower. And at the end of the conning tower is actually a hatch that goes up onto the cigarette deck. So the conning tower actually is a closed submersible area that could actually be flooded if, in fact, there was a problem. The hatch could be closed without basically feathering the submarine and flooding the submarine. And in this area, though, the helmsman had a duplicate set of controls in the control room. So basically this large wheel here is basically the rudder that controls the rudder and has the ability to physically, you can override the mechanical systems and physically, with brute strength, actually turn the rudder with that wheel. When the captain or the XO would dive the boat, they basically would pull this lever, and they would do that twice. And when that would go, the crew would know that the boat is going to dive. When it would go 3 times, the boat was going to go back up to the surface. The middle control right here is what's yellow is basically what's called the general alarm. So that would be basically duty stations. The men, if they were eating or whatever they might be doing, they needed to get to their stations pretty pronto. And the last one is basically one they did not want to hear very often. That was the collision alarm. So this would be a time to hold on really tight.
That's the red one.
The red one. That's right. One of the biggest problems with submariners or submariners in World War II is they would constantly be getting their head bashed into the top of the hull or being thrown to the floor with explosions from, well, who knows where. They didn't know where they were coming from. So there'd be a number of broken arms and wrists and fractures and stuff. So it was an ongoing battle, to say the least.
The complexity and extent and sophistication of all these very different systems is just overwhelming when you get on this boat.
It really is. It's a marvel. It really is.
Okay, Gary, where are we now?
Well, we've now entered in what's called the crew's mess, and what we've just walked by was, in fact, the galley kitchen. So in this kitchen area that we're just directly in front of now, or two cooks, they typically would cook for all the men. All the men on the boat ate the same food, whether you were the captain or the torpedo man. Everybody had the same food. One of the things about the submarine service is they did eat very well. This is the kitchen area, but there would be two cooks, as I mentioned, but there also would be a baker who would typically bake at night, so they made their own bread and pastries and so on. But in the kitchen, you'll notice there's a large coffee urn. They would bring on about 400 to 500 pounds of coffee on any patrol for the men. They also would bring on about 2,000 pounds of beef and pork, and it would be all boned. It would be put into a freezer that were standing above the hatch. Yet also they would bring down about 100 chickens, and they would eat well. So they would have things like steak. They would maybe even have lobster occasionally. But they also would have an ice cream. Right behind your shoulder here, Peter, is in fact the ice cream machine. So
really?
In 1940, we had a Taylor soft serve ice cream machine that was on the boat, and it was one of the prized possessions of the crew. They enjoyed their vanilla ice cream.
That's amazing.
So
that
was neat.
90 to 100 degrees out in the Pacific, it might be nice to have a little ice cream.
It was a restaurant, yeah, no doubt about it.
Yeah. So, you get the impression for the type of difficult duty that these men were enduring that there was an attempt to give them some extras.
Well, there was. There's no doubt about it. And the Navy realized that the work that these men were doing was pretty remarkable, and the captains knew that too. The crew basically, for the most part, the officers did not wear the Navy uniform for the most part. They could wear long pants or possibly shorts, but they would wear possibly a Hawaiian shirt, which was acceptable on submarine service. The men typically might not wear a shirt on the boat, which would not be acceptable on the surface Navy.
I'm with Gary McKean, a docent at the USS Silverside Submarine and Museum in Muskegon, Michigan, and we're learning about all things USS Silverside's wartime life, life on a submarine, and the lifestyle of the sailors on the USS Silversides.
Well, the crew's mess that we're in actually was also their family room, if you will. So this would be an opportunity where the men could come in here and play cribbage. They'd play cards. They had a phonograph, basically a record player. It was a Magnavox that Magnavox Corporation donated to all the submarines in World War II. So the men could play music of the era, the 40s and the 30s and so on. So it would not be unusual to have a big band record playing in this room while the men were here.
B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I got a gal
in Kalamazoo.
Don't want to boast, but I know she's a toast
of Kalamazoo, zoo, 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 zoo.
Well, it looks like we've made the full length now.
We have. We're in the final part of our journey. We're in the stern torpedo room, the aft torpedo room is what we like to call it. Well, Peter, this really has been a wonderful experience for me to be your guide today. I thank you for coming to Muskegon to our museum. And as I said earlier, this is really important to us and important to me to tell the story of the men that served on the Silversides in World War II, particularly as they leave us and their story might not have been told. And it's important to have our visitors know what it was like to be on a submarine in World War II and the history that the submarine has, a living history, but also the protection that it gave. And it helped the United States, one boat at a time, really win a war against an enemy that was caught us very blindsided in Pearl Harbor.
Being on the USS Silversides with you today, Gary, has been a powerful and moving experience, not only to find out about this piece of living history right here in Muskegon, Michigan, but more importantly, to learn about the men who served.
You bet.
Gary McKean, docent at the USS Silversides here in Muskegon, Michigan. Thanks so much.
You're welcome, and thank you for being here.
For Current State, this is Peter Wharf.